Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 3, Episode 4. Dave, a little bit of breaking news here. Just it's 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon. The Steelers obviously played last night, and we'll get into that. But Allen Robinson of the Tribune Review reporting that he talked to conditioning coach Tom Shaw down in Florida, and Mike Wallace has been working with Tom Shaw and says he expects him to report, quote-unquote, pretty soon.
Yeah, we've heard that pretty soon before, but this is, I mean, it's getting more and more encouraging here. At least we have sightings of Mike Wallace now. In fact, if you go to Tom Shaw's Facebook page, there's a couple pictures of Mike Wallace working the ropes and all down there. And if you remember, Tom Shaw is the guy that Ike Taylor does a lot of work with down there in Florida. Ike has trained down with Tom Shaw for several off seasons. So good scoop by Allen Robinson there. And you put two and two together, and this time I don't have to take my shoes off. You get four, and I don't know how long. What do you consider soon, David?
I would think of being around the Indianapolis game next Sunday, so sometime in the next 7 days, 7 to 10 days. That's kind of where I thought he'd be all along if he was going to report. Of course, that's just a guess. You know, if I'm right, it's just being lucky as opposed to anything else. But yeah, you get in 2 weeks before the regular season starts, get his work in, and be good to go. And I think I don't see anything wrong with him not being here. I'm not one of those people who's mad at Mike Wallace. He can do whatever he thinks is best for him. And I don't think he's going to be way behind because he wasn't here for the first 2 weeks of camp. If it's the first week of the season and he reports, then yeah, he'll have a little bit of trouble getting worked in as quickly as they might like. But he's a wide receiver. It's not all that complicated. It's not going to be all that different than what he was doing under Bruce Arians. So, yeah, generally good news, and it's nice to hear somebody talk about it. Again, they have disabused people of this myth that Mike Wallace wanted $100 million. Matt Barrow's got that story in San Francisco. We know Matt. He's a good reporter. But I'm sure that was planted by the Niners. They're the only team he went to visit. And rather than just say, well, they're not interested, it sounds better if he wants an exorbitant amount of money and, you know, the team obviously can't afford it. So the story's kind of gone along just as we predicted, and we are where we thought we were, but it's nice to see an update from Allen.
And when you look at this, and this is, you know, if people want to go back and listen to what we've said in the past, well, you know, it's on tape. And we firmly said, look, you know, Mike Wallace hasn't talked. The Steelers dang sure don't talk about this stuff. And as you mentioned with the thing with Matt Barrows there, as we've laid out there before too, you know, it's very possible because Matt Barrows did not quote his source. You know, just it was a source close to the 49ers, within the 49ers organization back there, that Mike wanted that money. And as you stated, and we stated before, you know, that smells of a move to pacify a fan base to say, hey, we looked into getting Mike Wallace. He wanted extraordinary amount of money like Larry Fitzgerald, plus with the first round draft pick. You know, and people refuse to believe that. And I've had arguments on Twitter all along with people saying, look, show me a quote where Mike Wallace has said how much money he wants. And everybody wants to point to the Matt Barrow story. And we've pointed out to him all along, he hasn't said that. And in the story by Allen Robinson today, you know, he says he's not talking and the Steelers aren't talking. He never said he wants $100 million or whatever, you know, or even a $50 million contract. So, you know, cut Mike Wallace a little slack here, okay? This is typical negotiation stuff. Now, has it gone on further than it probably should have? Probably. I mean, I think David, even both of us said maybe a couple of days after camp opened to start with, you know, and it's gone further than that, what I originally thought in my eyes. But, you know, I've still been in a firm belief that he was going to report before at least, you know, the regular season starts. And I still think a long-term deal gets done with him.
Okay. And so we'll continue to keep you posted. Wallace Watch is we're on guard. We're up on that wall, making sure We've got the latest and greatest info. Dave, Steelers, Eagles last night. Steelers lose 24-23. The first important news in the sense of injury stuff, David Johnson looks like did some serious damage to his knee or his ankle or his leg. We haven't heard the exact report, but I'm sure it's going to be an IR thing, lost for the year. How significant is it?
It's ACL. I don't know how much further, how much more I can add on to that. It is.
Yeah, how significant is it, though, to the team?
Oh, how significant is it? Yeah, well, I mean, you look at what they used in formations last night with David on that opening drive. You know, pretty telling stuff there. What I don't have the stats in front of me. Do you remember what I rattled off to you there?
Yeah, six out of 15.
Yeah, 6 out of 15 times David Johnson specifically as a fullback on that opening drive. So, you know, we don't have the complete participating and charting done throughout the night what they used a fullback in. But, you know, let's face it, David Johnson was having a great camp, was the star of the Friday Night Lights, Mike Tomlin said after that in his press conference after that ended. And I think this is a big blow to some of the things that Todd Haley wants to do. You know, when you look at the comments made by Mike Tomlin saying that, hey, David Johnson is also going to be used as an inline tight end. You know, now it's Will Johnson's turn, a guy we've talked about quite a bit and a guy I had on the wrap-up podcast, you know, 24 hours before the kickoff from the game. So, yeah, I would say pretty significant injury there. And I know you continue with your thoughts on why didn't they go out and address, you know, perhaps a true fullback in free agency.
Yeah, and I think I don't like to prop the show too much, but Dave and I did a segment, and you I think you can find it on demand. Hopefully it'll be up there. We talked about a lot of this stuff, and you made some good points. I think that you refuted a little bit of what I was saying. I'm surprised they didn't have more guys in there, a real fullback. And you talked about, you know, exactly what the skill set is not necessarily a guy that you would think of as a traditional fullback in terms of what they're looking for from what Todd Haley's looking for in this offense. Couple things here. It certainly opens the door for Will Johnson to potentially win that job and that roster spot. But Steelers have some issues at tight end and at this fullback position, and I'm more and more starting to think of them as one group, because you may well see Jamie McCoy, the tight end from Texas A&M, who's 6'2", kind of 240 type. You may see him, 6'3", I think, actually, moved to the fullback position here, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if the Steelers go out and look for somebody now and bring somebody into camp. Again, I just say, I've said for 2 weeks, I'm surprised that the converted guys are the guys they want to use there, but David Johnson did look good. He's out. And they'll go forward with that. It could conceivably be the end of his Steeler career, as he was a restricted free agent, wasn't he, this year, Dave?
Yeah, he was restricted, and he'll be unrestricted now next year.
Yep, and the two other injuries out of the game, Jonathan Dwyer with a shoulder sprain, doesn't seem to be significant, probably miss a couple of days of practice, but not more than a week, I'm sure. No structural damage, full range of motion, and the MRI came back positive. And the other one, Mike Adams with his knee. And this is where we'll start our game coverage. Mike Adams came out. I think he played 17 snaps. And just to fill it out, the Pup guys obviously didn't play. Willie Colon and Cam Hayward were ruled out. They didn't play. And Brett Kiesel was given permission not to report because of the birth of his child. So that was a little bit of a surprise, but everything else we knew about. So, Dave, let's start with the offensive line. You do such great work during the season at watching all this stuff, breaking down play by play, giving these guys grades, and you'll have even more opportunity this year with the All-22 film. But not a good night for Mike Adams, and certainly on the pass-blocking side of things. Might have done some decent things in the run-blocking, but really had some trouble with the speed of the edge rushers.
Absolutely. That wide nine of the Eagles really gave him fits there, and thank God Trent Cole didn't play either for the Eagles there. They're starting right defensive end, or else who knows? I mean, it wouldn't have been any better.
Couldn't have been any better.
Yeah. Other than maybe Roethlisberger just takes a little bit harder hit. I don't know. It was a rough night for him pass protection-wise. I've said all along since they drafted him, this is a kid that has all the tools that it just has to find a way to finally get somebody to help hone them and put them all in the toolbox together. He didn't have them last night. He was not using his hands well. He looked like he was trying to overprotect of a move back towards the center a few times, and just let the tap was one of the guys that went right around him there. And, you know, even when he held, he didn't hold good. I mean, the refs missed an obvious hold on one of those. And if you're going to hold, at least, you know, hold and prevent your quarterback from taking a hit there. So no, it was not. He had a few nice run blocks, one setting the edge kind of wide and another one down out at the second level there I liked on one of the fourth down. I think the fourth down in either a third and short or a fourth, I forget what down it was, when Redmond jump-stepped to the made his read and then went to the left there. He had a good down block inside on that as well. But
yeah, that was the fourth and one on the –
Yeah, fourth and one. And pass protection, though, woo-woo. I mean, 2.5 sacks, two fumble recoveries, and that last one that he picked up evidently sprained his knee on. He stayed in the game one or two more plays, and I just was going back and rewatching that. He got leg whipped after that as well, too. Had his feet just wiped right out from underneath that two plays later, which didn't help that knee, and he left immediately after that. Now, the other tackles also not a good showing. Marcus Gilbert got pushed back one time around the edge, another, I believe. Trey Essex, when he came into the game, didn't fare any better. Kelvin Beecham, who that's good info, knowing what to look for before you go into a game. You had talked to Sean Coogler, and he had said, hey, Beecham's a guy we're going to work at both left guard and left tackle, and that indeed, Sean Coogler was right on the money there. Beecham had a roller coaster night. I think he had a knockdown there, but he also had a couple of penalties to go along with it, and some pass protection issues. And in my opinion, they're just trying to see what he has at left tackle. I mean, it's not to me. He just needs to be kicked inside permanently or play, maybe an emergency right tackle position. But not a good night for the tackles in general.
No, Marcus Gilbert, too. Not a good night for Marcus Gilbert either.
No, that's what I said. He got pushed around a little bit and around the edge as well, too. So, no.
Yeah, okay.
Not a good let's just say this. Max Starks hadn't taken a snap in training camp and going up the depth chart.
Exactly. Then inside, kind of what we expected from Pouncey. I think DeCastro did perfectly adequately fine. I think it's just the type of performance in his first professional game that you'd expect. If anything, kind of solidified his stock and maybe his position. Ramon Foster didn't look great on the left side. You pointed out that he and Adams got tied up on an exchange and gave up a sack on one of them, one of the sacks. And then the second unit in the offensive line was equally bad. What a mess that was. So, Todd Haley trying to get this offense installed, but the work is in front of Sean Coogler here to get this line sorted out. And, look, the point is maybe the left side's completely different. Cologne's going to be in there. Maybe Max Starks is there. And nobody's throwing Mike Adams under the bus or saying, he is a bust or anything like that. Just had a, speed of the game, big guy. Those guys coming off the edge, he probably hadn't seen that at all in training camp. The Steelers probably didn't simulate it for this game. So he saw something different, and now he's got something to work on.
Yeah, David, I thought DeCastro had a good game too. This is a guy, reportedly he hasn't had an overpowering or overwhelming start of training camp. But he has come on the last week or so, I think Sean Coogler said in one of the interviews there. And he showed the ability to move from the right to the left as he did at Stanford there. Those were some things, key things I was looking for, because that's a big part of his game is being on the move. And he laid some pretty good blocks there. And if you go back and watch the play on the Jonathan Dwyer long run, even though we've been popping Gilbert and a few of the other guys inside there, that was great. I have a great still shot of that up on my Twitter feed as well, too. Great blocking. DeCastro turns his guy inside, and there's just a nice, nice hole for Dwyer to work through on that. And so, yeah, I think DeCastro really was above, it wasn't way above the line, but it was above the line. And as far as Adams goes, David, do we really think this guy was going to just cakewalk through the preseason here and waltz right in, with zero issues into the week one starting role? No. And, at least they've thrown him into the deep end of the pool now. At least a cup or two of the water was taken out by not having to face Trent Cole last night. But now they have a good idea exactly where where Mike Adams is in his development, and they can start working, you know, to fix some of that stuff. How long this knee injury that he suffered keeps him out, who really knows? You know, yep. Is it going to be a week? Is it going to be 2 weeks? We'll just have to watch and see on that.
The other skilled guys, the backs and the receivers, really the position, the number four, or if Wallace reports, the number five receiver, nobody really did much. Tyler Beiler with a nice catch. Dale Lawley suggested that he thought Beiler was kind of the guy who was a little bit ahead of the other guys going into the game, and he did make a nice catch on the back shoulder throw, a 30-yard gain. None of the other guys impressed much. Marquise Mays did some things on special teams, and I got to think he's got a real chance to be a practice squad guy. But again, you know, the Steelers need Mike Wallace in a big way. That really would make that offense so much stronger. The running backs, we didn't see a lot of it. We saw a lot of Baron Batch, and I think people generally liked what they saw, even though the numbers aren't that impressive. And we saw great stuff from Chris Rainey. He's on the roster. That's a done deal. And he's going to bring, you know, he's going to bring something to the table. And I'm more convinced than ever that it's the backs are pretty much set. John Dwyer is going to make the roster, be the backup to Isaac Redman, and Batch and Rainey are going to be on it, and John Clay is probably ticketed for the practice squad.
That's exactly the way I laid it out in my pre-training camp roster projection there of the 53. Back to the wide receivers there. I think, and we'll find this out when we finish up our charting, I think Derek Williams and Marquise Mays actually saw the field before Tony Clements in this game too, so that should give you a gauge of possibly where Scotty Montgomery kind of has these guys on the depth chart right now. I'm with you on the Tyler Beiler catch. I thought that was a great back shoulder catch. I thought it was the best throw that Jared Johnson made of the night as well, too. So anytime you make a catch for big yardage like that, you're definitely going to, it's going to stick out in the film, and that's what Tyler Beiler did last night, although it was just the one catch. So let's look for him possibly to get more playing time earlier in the game moving forward. Derek Williams is an interesting guy to watch. Really didn't do anything, but he is a guy that, you know, probably can help out on special teams. And as you mentioned, Marquise Mays, you know, mostly going to be, they try to end the round on him. I think Jared Johnson threw one at his feet one time, and then, of course, had some punt returns, I think one or two of them. One I know was called back for a illegal block of the back by Jamie McCoy, and it may well have been the second one, too, because I know Jamie McCoy had two of those in that game. As far as running backs go, with Batch, did you one thing that I noticed, and maybe it was just me, you know, first couple times through, it looked like he was a little bit tentative coming out, you know, with his carries there. But as the game wore on, it seemed like he trusted that knee more, and I really thought it was evident by one of those jump cuts that he made, later in the game. I think it was even on that that final drive of theirs, scoring drive of theirs, where he made a nice jump cut and was running hard right up the gut. And, you know, that's one thing I was going to ask you, to see if that stuck out to you at all.
Yeah, we saw Bats get a lot of looks. Mike Tomlin wanted to test his, he talked about testing guys' fitness levels, and I think that was it with Baron Batch. Baron Batch, he meant with him to test his knee and to test his fitness. He gave him 19 carries. Tomlin, clearly the Steelers like this kid, and they think pretty highly of him. And I know, you know, you talked to Mark Cavalli and some other guys, they think he can get real carries in game situations. So I didn't think he did a lot in the goal line stuff, but a lot of that I'll put on the blocking. But I think just as you said, he got more comfortable as it went on. He was interviewed on in the locker room with Tunch and Wolf today and talked about that. He felt comfortable. He feels like his knee's 100%. He's mentally there now to the point where, you know, he doesn't have to think about it anymore. So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good assessment on your part. Dave, the other thing I want to just talk about is I had suggested not seeing Charlie Batch practice on Tuesday, that maybe he wouldn't get any reps on Thursday. And I'll pat myself on the back. Got that one right. Gerard Johnson got the whole second half. Didn't do a lot, but I'm going to say, because it hasn't been said by many, that I think there's a real chance the Steelers don't, you know, I'm one of these people, but you and I have both assumed from day one that the three guys who are going to make it are the three veterans, and they'll go that way. Now, I don't know that it's not going to go that way, but the idea that they could cut Charlie Batch, and he's not going anywhere but down the street to hang out if they do that, and maybe keep Gerard Johnson on the practice squad, I don't think we could rule that out. And I think Mike Tomlin, I'll be interested to see if Mike Tomlin addresses that over the next week and how the playing time gets divided in Indianapolis, because Ben's probably going to get a quarter, Byron Leftwich probably going to get a quarter, maybe a little bit more, so going into the second half probably. And then we'll see what happens with Johnson and Batch, because I think they know what they have in Batch and want to probably take another look at this kid. Didn't do much of anything in the game last night, but didn't have good protection. But just something to think about when constructing this roster. If they're worried about numbers or need to keep an extra offensive lineman or something like that, maybe that puts Charlie Batch in a little bit of jeopardy. And the fact that nobody's going to sign him and he's going to be down the street probably actually works against him.
One of the things I made a point of, I think, on Trib Live Radio was, Batch is so good, though, on the sideline, though, as well, too. Helping breaking down film, being a mediator of sorts at some point during the year, maybe between Haley and Roethlisberger. Jared Johnson, we honestly really didn't get a good assessment of him last night. I mean, let's be honest, six passes, three completions. Two of those completions didn't even go 2 yards, in the air, I don't think. And then you add in the pass to Byler that was complete there. And then you add in the fact behind the piecemeal, scrub offensive line. David, I've got to admit, and this is, in my preseason roster projection as well, too, I would be shocked, literally, I'd be shocked if they keep Jared Johnson and not Charlie Batch. I think Jared Johnson's a guy that you can, if there's enough upside, you just put him on the practice squad to run the scout teams and all against some of the type quarterbacks that they might face this year that have legs and can run.
I don't see him on the 53, man. I just think, it'd be interesting to see how it comes down. I think all along we've assumed the three guys, and I think Jared Johnson has impressed Mike Tomlin enough that he's getting an honest-to-goodness look.
I just think, if he shows in practice, I think is where he's going to have to show it the most to give them a reason to keep him on the practice squad, because he's not going to get good quality snaps, in my opinion, really, in these preseason games moving forward. I mean, like you said, how much is he going to play? We know in the third, that's the real tune-up one. So if he's around on the roster after three preseason games, well, then maybe in that fourth preseason game, he gets more of a look, more of a look. That would probably be the next time that he would get extended playing time. But like you said, that could very well happen this next game. Division of labor, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, will be interesting to watch in this next preseason game. But at the same time, if you're going to keep Charlie Batch around, you got to get him a handful of snaps mixed in there as well.
Yep. Dave, flipping over to the other side of the ball, we now know why John Mitchell stood on the table, as you like to say, when he spoke to the media on the Saturday when the Steelers moved up in the fourth round and took Alameda Ta'amu. Hampton hurt. People wanted to ask about that. They wanted to ask about Ta'amu. And he stood up and said, hey, you're overlooking Steve McClendon. Don't do that, because you're going to be writing stories about him at the end of the year. Third play of the game, the Eagles have the ball. Michael Vick, one of the more elusive guys in the league, moving to his right. McClendon snares him one-handed, throws him down with a sack. He's coming as advertised. He's been good all through camp and looked good last night.
Tell me this about the Steelers' defensive coaches. Those guys will speak the truth, won't they?
Yeah, they like to tell it how it is. I mean, I haven't had a lot of interaction with John Mitchell. As you know, I've talked to Lake and Butler, but the coaches are pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of hiding. It's a man's league, and they're going to deal with these guys like men, and they're going to answer questions directly, and they're going to tell you who's playing well and who isn't playing quite so well.
Yeah, I'm not a whole lot of coach speak when you deal with those guys, and John Mitchell. Look, this guy pounding on the table, and we got to see exactly what that looked like last night, because I thought he played extremely well. McClendon in the middle, I thought he stayed square. He had a sack. He had, three tackles, I believe. Everything that you want out of a 3-4 nose tackle last night, eating up space, two-gapping, working one gap even, when asked. I thought we saw it last night in his snaps, and I was very, very impressed with his play, and it makes you feel a lot better, even if Casey Hampton is not, let's say Casey does not go on the PUP to start the season, maybe he's 1 or 2 weeks out, at least you have confidence now, heading into maybe week one or week two, you just make Casey Hampton inactive for those games, give him the couple extra weeks to rest that knee, and continue to move forward with McClendon in the meantime.
Yep, and no Kiesel, no Hayward. I didn't think anybody else on the D-line did a lot to maybe stand out, but certainly Al Woods' interception is worth taking note of.
Absolutely. Go back and watch the film on that tape, listeners. You can even get that one play on NFL.com underneath the videos section there. Go back and watch that, because not only did Brandon Johnson, who we'll get to in a minute, who had a nice game, he provided pressure on that play. Watch Al Woods dispose of his blocker to step in front of the running back there and make that interception there. You know, that could have very easily, been a completed pass or, you know, an incomplete pass. If he's not there. So although Brandon Johnson got the pressure, forced the release, Al Woods, I thought, did a great job of ditching this guy and getting in position to make that interception. Now, outside of that, did he stick out? No, not really. But I mean, him and Corbin Bryant, I saw switching sides there at defensive end, which is good to see that flexibility there. They had a little bit of pressure on the night. They were doing their jobs overall, and I think Al Woods, though, I think he's your guy right now, leader in the clubhouse for that fourth defensive end spot.
Yeah, I think that's right. The linebackers, Sean Spence on all four units on special teams. He was the only rookie on all four units, according to Mike Prisuta. Chris Carter was on all four of the units as well. Carter looked good early, but the guy who really stood out was a guy we've talked about a few times, the undrafted rookie Adrian Robinson out of Temple. And he was coming off the edge with that wide nine technique a couple times, down in a four-pointer a few times, which may maybe get a little talking to from the coaching staff about that. But he looked good last night.
He was wearing out the left-hand side of that third or fourth string Eagles offensive line there. His motor was always running, man. He had a couple spin moves in there, a couple bull rushes. He was putting pressure on that side, and that's what you want. The guy might not know, he doesn't know the ins and outs of where he's supposed to be all the time and what's going on behind him, like Keith Butler said. But, hey, just give me effort, you know. Show me the efforts there. Show me the motor. Show me the conditioning, which you know, it was to be expected too late in that last drive there in the 2 minute, you know, Eagles running that drill. He had his hands on his hips. Don't let him fool you. But, he fought through it, was still getting pressure there. And this kid is the star of the undrafted class. And if there was one that might have, a chance to make the 53-man roster, depending, of course, what happens with Worlds, to start the season or whatever else, injuries may happen or whatnot, he is a guy that at the very, very, very least is going to make the practice squad, as an outside linebacker. And he could be a guy that will eventually back up whoever on the right side there moving forward.
Yeah, and then in the secondary, we've got the battle at the other corner. I thought some very nice stuff from Cortez Allen. Saw Curtis Brown make a good play early, but unfortunately he undid his good with a couple bad plays. One, I think he fell on the 70-yard touchdown, and then the very next play, the Eagles had the ball. He gets beat by a guy who actually played for Cincinnati and had a big game in Heinz Field and knocked Pitt's BCS title hopes out. When the Bearcats came back and beat the Panthers, I think 45-44, Marty Gilliard, Curtis not his best day out there.
No, as you mentioned, a couple good plays, I think, before that, but on the 70-yard, I would like to see that on the all 22.
Yep.
Hopefully Tunch and them do that in the Chalk Talk segment on Steelers.com. Hopefully they'll break that play down, because I would like to see, you can't see that right now on the NFL preseason live package right now, because they don't have the all 22 until regular season starts. But on the other one, it's plain and simple there. He had great coverage on Marty there, but he did not get the head around, and there was all the keys too, because Marty was definitely looking up for the ball, and Curtis, by the right as he starts to turn that head, that ball's right where it's supposed to be. It was a great pass and a great catch on top of it, and good coverage. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of the catch by, who was it, Bolden against McFadden in week one of last year's. Was that Bolden that had that touchdown catch early in the game for the Ravens against the Steelers week one last year?
I think so, yes.
It reminded me a little bit of that. McFadden was right there in the hip pocket, but just didn't get turned around find the ball there. But yeah, I thought Cortez Allen had a good game. Not, you know, they say cornerbacks have to have short memories. So we'll see how Curtis, you know, rebounds. And interesting part, have you heard some of these interviews with Curtis Brown?
I have.
That guy's smarter than what I think a lot of people give him credit to. I think he's a, what did he say? He's a biography buff?
A documentary buff and a hog hunter. A hog hunter.
Okay, well, one out of two ain't bad. But documentary buff, and even though the guy is quiet and pretty strange cat on Twitter as well, of course, you know, I am too, but, you know, I think this guy is going to be okay. I mean, he'll learn from the film there. I like his comments after the game and the post game as well, too, you know, in relation to that. But Cortez Allen, nice game. Really didn't see a lot of Keenan Lewis there. But, right now I think this is a two-man race between Keenan and Cortez to see who starts outside opposite Ike Taylor. And the loser of that, if Keenan loses when he comes into the game in nickel situations, I'm fairly confident Cortez kicks inside to the nickel.
Yeah, and they're going to both be on the field more than half the time, most likely, with the defenses the Steelers are going to play. They have two guys I liked in the secondary were Robert Golden, the free agent safety out of Arizona, and I thought Myron Roll looked good. And I know you maybe didn't think as much of his performance. Dale Lawley liked him as well, but he's a guy who was completely invisible in his 2 weeks in camp, and he's a guy who's not going to make the roster. He's not going to make the practice squad, but he was flying around and put some hits on. But I think Golden is a guy who actually has a chance to make the 53, and I think he's a lock to, at worst, be on the practice squad. He did some good things.
I haven't pegged for the practice squad. Speaking of Golden, he showed up, especially in special teams, able to get downfield. I've got to be honest with you, I didn't look, the next few times through the film. I'm going to pay a lot more attention to the late safeties in the game. Roll stuck out from missing at least two tackles that I saw, just plain out, you know, whiffs on them. And that's not going to be good for a defensive back in a Steelers defense. I mean, let's face it, these guys are supposed to be able to be good tacklers, in the secondary there. So I'll pay a little bit more attention to both those guys moving forward there. But I'm with you. I think Golden's a little bit of a reach for the 53, but I definitely think practice squad is well within his reach.
Sean Spence, we saw him out there. What was your take on him?
Sideline to sideline, moved real good, real, real fast, making plays there. I had to think a few times, inside there on some plays, but reacted nonetheless. He got caught up in the trash a little bit there with a blocker, I think twice that I noted. But 100% effort, and, I mean, that's his first NFL game. It looked like he thought that he knew what he was doing. So read into that what you will. His counterpart inside, Stevenson Sylvester, looked like he understood more what was going on. But the thing that stuck out the most about Sylvester is he did not have control. He did not keep his body in control.
And, in fact, Tomlin mentioned it. The touchdown, we talked about, we left our feet. That was Sylvester who went flying by and jumped by, and then the quarterback stepped up on that 70-yard touchdown.
Absolutely. That was one of the plays. I think he may have missed another sack in there, and then I know on one or two run plays kind of leaving his feet there. He's just got to instead of flailing all around, he has got to keep balance and keep on his feet, just like Mike Thomas said. And that's one thing that stuck out to me there. He did get mixed up in a little bit of trash with some blockers on I believe, two running plays that I noted there. Just got to do a better job of stacking and shedding. Got to remember, these guys are trying to diagnose and take on these blockers at the same time, when you're talking about these inside guys. And that's the hardest thing. I think we heard Keith Butler said after the draft, try to keep these guys covered up as much as possible, meaning the defensive line. So maybe that's more of a reflection on some of the late play of the defensive line when that was happening, not helping keeping those inside linebackers covered up. But not a bad game for Sylvester, but once again, room to grow, and I think he's going to make the 53.
So, Dave, when I step back and look at the game, what stands out to me is what I've seen in training camp is what I saw on the field. We've seen Todd Haley running the ball and running little wheel routes and screens, using the fullback, that kind of stuff. We saw that in the opening drive. That's exactly what's been going on in camp, those quick outs, not really throwing the ball down the field as much so far. We saw some trouble with the offensive line in camp. They haven't been good in the run game. They were fair, and they certainly weren't particularly good in the pass game yesterday. The second unit was awful. Mike Adams had a tough go. Defensively, kind of as expected, the guys who stood out, Chris Carter was very good. He's been good all through camp. The guy, Chris Rainey, has been great in camp. It certainly showed all the flash that we saw last night, and then bang, does it in the game. So I think the takeaway for me is kind of things are as expected. You know, disappointing on the offensive line would be maybe the central theme of the game, but more or less kind of the Steelers are where they are, and no big surprises really from what I saw last night.
Yeah, and you would know. I mean, you've been there at the practices to kind of compare the two there. The offensive line was indeed going to be the biggest talking point today. And then behind that, probably the explosive plays given up by Curtis Brown and the secondary as a whole. Overall, you know, if you take out those two plays, was the secondary pretty decent? Yeah, so a couple missed tackles there we mentioned in the secondary late in the game there. But, yeah, those would be the two main talking points to take away. The running game, it was good to see Todd Haley do the things that he did, trying to throw to the fullback early in the game, using a lot of 22 personnel in there. I like the use of the three tight ends on the short yardage play that we talked about with Redmond on the fourth down play. So, yeah, overall, you know, not shocking either direction that it went in, what we take away from that game. Before I forget, I wanted to say, what did you think about that play by John or lack of play by John Clay?
Yeah, John Clay blew his assignment there. I guess it's supposed to be a stretch or some kind of reach-around handoff, and he ran out into the pattern, and Byron Leftwich certainly let him have it on the sideline.
Yeah, not too happy Byron was there, and I don't know. You know, I think we both agree Clay's headed towards the practice squad there, and unless something changes. But yeah, I think you nailed it. And you know, hey, Mike Thomas said, what did he say after the game? He says, we'll deal with it, but we won't accept it. You know, as far as talking about the performance on the field last night there. So, you know, hey, nowhere to go but up in a couple of those areas.
Yeah, and let's just special teams, not great. Al Evers probably not thrilled with some of the coverage units there, but Drew Butler had a nice night, and he's been pretty good in camp. You know, he's looked good. He certainly has the leg to do the job, and he didn't hurt himself at all. He's going to give Jeremy Kapanos a run for his money.
And Danny Ratman, how clutch was that?
He made his. Sushi looked good on his. You know, good stuff all around from the guys kicking the ball last night.
Yeah, and you know, a couple of those returns were negated by two Jamie McCoy illegal blocking in the back penalties. That I think one was ticky tack there, to be honest with you. But yeah, definitely some improvement with special teams with Al Everest and all. Rainey on one of the punt returns or punt coverage teams, I think, or kickoff team. I can't remember one of the two. Rainey was on. I don't think you'll see that again anytime soon. But, yeah, definitely room improvement on special teams.
Any other big takes, Dave? Anything else to touch on?
It'd be nice to see if we get that McClendon, Kiesel, and Hood some more time together in perhaps this next preseason game, which we should. I'd like to see that front unit work together along with the starting linebacker group. But, hey, you know, that first preseason game is used to take a look at a lot of bodies. Do not read too much into it. People are complaining, oh, only 3-point-something yards per play, and look at the passing numbers. And, boy, if you're reading stats out of this game right now, you know, we chart it to let you know where people are positionally, how many snaps people got. But outside of breaking it down statistically, you know, stay away from that. Don't read too much into that game.
All right. Good stuff.
People will anyway, but, you know, it never hurts to keep trying to remind them that. But, yeah, we don't know anything about Mike Adams' injury. I'm sure we'll learn about that. You hit on Jonathan Dwyer. He talked to Josina Anderson from ESPN. She had a good scoop on that. And, of course, DJ's going to be done for the year. So, unfortunate.
Yep. And the Steelers practice schedule now is they have today off. They traveled back last night. They have today off. They'll practice straight through now through Friday at La Trobe. I think they're all open to the public. I'll double check that, but they will practice on Monday. So they'll go all the practices 2:55 Saturday through Friday, and then they'll I think, you know, basically break camp out of La Trobe. I'm sure they'll do some kind of walkthrough or something on Saturday, and they'll play the Indianapolis Colts at Heinz Field, and I think that's a nationally televised game on Sunday. I will be reporting tomorrow, 12 to 2, at Buffalo Wild Wings with Dale Lawley. We'll be on 970 ESPN and Steeler Nation Radio Saturday and Sunday. I'll be up at camp Monday through Wednesday, and I'll be doing the show, the training camp special, Monday through Wednesday, 2 to 4. And then I'm off. I'm off to the Wild West, Montana, Dave. I've got a wedding out there over the weekend, so I'm going to miss the last two practices, and I'll be gone during the game. Hopefully I'll be able to watch it live, but I'm sure I'll be able to see it where I am, and then back sometime next week. So that's the general schedule of things.
I'll be on ESPN Honolulu tonight.
Nice.
10:35. So I will give everybody aloha from there. Check my Twitter feed at Steelers Depot. For information throughout the night, I'll tell you, give you a link to listen to that. Follow David on Twitter at Hammer Speaks. If you want Twitter updates about training camp, rapid fire, that's, you know, make sure you follow them there. Steelers Nation Radio, ESPN 970. Make sure you tune them in there and support them as well.
Yeah, we're having a big meeting Monday, 4 o'clock. I'm going to find out my fate.
tell them I vote for you, okay?
All right.
also, follow the show at Terrible Podcast, and we appreciate all the donations and the emails that keep coming in. We try to get back to as many people as we can on those, and I guess without any more said on that, take us home, David.
All right. Well, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.